In this episode of the Smart City Podcast, I had a great conversation with a fellow member of the Smart Cities Council Emerging Innovators Group, Janine Betts. I'll start by saying that everything we discussed is personal opinion only and does not represent the companies we work for and is not associated in any way with these companies. Now with that out of the way, Janine is a passionate advocate for sustainability and using smart techniques to help fight against climate change. Western Australia is really lucky to benefit from Janine's background as she brings the European approach to sustainability and molds it to suit the Australian conditions and environment. We discussed about the challenges and opportunities building a 6-star Green Star rating project and how Smart Cities is about the integration between sustainability and innovation. Janine also talks passionately about Western Australia finding its feet in terms of culture, growth and identity, and how Western Australia is well on their way to leading certain aspects of smart cities. As always, I really hope you enjoy listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it.
It's the Smart City Podcast, whoa, with smart city experts, here we go. Connecting smart technology, both big and small. Smart cities are making life better for all. Big data, emerging trends, self-driving cars and more. The Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.
Well, let's jump straight into this and in order to introduce yourself, can you tell us a little bit about your background?
Yeah, sure. So you will probably notice very quickly that I have a bit of an accent and I am indeed not from Australia. I was born and raised in Germany and I have been here since 2007. I have an engineering background with a major in architecture and urban design and a postgrad certificate in sustainability and climate policy. I currently work for the Land Lease Communities business in WA.
Yeah, wow, cool. So Janine and I are part of the Smart Cities Council Emerging Innovators Group. That's how we kind of got to know each other. So what sparked your interest in smart cities?
Well, I think that the conversation about smart cities is possibly one of the most important ones occurring at this point in time. As we know, climate change and sustainability as a whole is a challenge of our time. And I'm just very keen to be part of that. And I guess coming to Australia as an outsider, I have a bit of like kind of two perspectives, you know, one that is very much shaped by the European approach, which is very, you know, much around different countries working together. And that in combination with the Australian perspective, where we're quite isolated geographically, I think that's something that's always on my mind as to how I sort of balance the two mindsets. And that has, I guess, prompted me to be involved and just share some of the insights that I get through, being in touch with my home country, which is Germany, whilst also working in Australia.
Yeah, cool. Are there any particular technologies or concepts that you've come across that you're really interested or are already exploring?
Yeah, so for me, it's really, smart cities really involves around the human experience. To me, people are the central aspects of how we design our city. Obviously, I'm going to say that, I'm an architect. Yeah. So, you know, how can we use technology to make the experience of our urban fabric richer? And obviously, in the beginning, building information modeling has been around in Europe for quite some time. I wrote my thesis on that in 2006, and it was already a trend in Europe and has since become a trend in Australia. So that, you know, I guess at the building level is something that I'm really interested in, and how can we utilize that technology to really have a smart system whereby we know everything about our buildings beyond the construction itself. But also technologies that allow us to map and model human behavior and then facilitate a participatory design approach to really ensure that we speak to the right people at the right time and get positive outcomes. So really, to me, technology is a way of getting to a point where we design cities in a way that they improve the experience that the citizen has.
Yeah, cool. Yeah, I'm really interested in BIM as well, so building information modeling from a horizontal perspective, because I think vertical, you know, buildings and that kind of thing, it's quite, you know, advanced, whereas I see so much potential for roads and bridges and our horizontal infrastructure, you know, to know where services are, so, you know, your water pipes and all that kind of stuff, that real integrated approach, not just, yeah, with the buildings, but all this other infrastructure that we have running under our feet or under our wheels of our cars and that kind of thing.
Yeah, I 100% agree. It's really a holistic approach that looks at the whole city as opposed to building individually. But, you know, how do they relate to each other? How do they interact? And, you know, how do you link that to the infrastructure, you know, the horizontal element that you mentioned? Yeah. So that's something I think it's quite exciting. There's a lot of really cool stuff already happening in Europe and certainly, you know, big land development projects in the Middle East as well, where you can then, you know, add the human element into it and really, really allow technology to sort of assist the process of design from, you know, from the beginning, but also at the refinement stage when, you know, sometimes projects don't work as well as they were you know, intended to, or people invent new ways of using the spaces that you create. So I think, if we get to that point where we have that participation from a user perspective and feed that data back into the models that we create, we have a real, a life cycle really of data that starts at design, inception, construction, to the maintenance and the usage of our cities.
Yeah, definitely. So let's talk about right now, what are some of the projects and things you're working on?
So through the work that I'm doing with Lendlease, I'm involved with a very exciting project called Alkimos Beach. It is the first project in Australia to receive the 6-star rating from the Green Building Council of Australia.
Yeah, wow.
And as part of that, we obviously have a whole lot of commitments that we've made, and that certification and the commitments that come with that really inform every single decision that we make along the way. So it's a very interesting project that will run for a few more years. And we have just launched a new project also here in WA called Alkimos Vista. Both projects are very close to the coast. So indeed, as we're speaking now, I'm actually looking out to the ocean because our beautiful sales office is in a really good spot. And I guess greenfield development really needs to be at the forefront in many ways of considering smart, because I feel we've got a responsibility to be as smart as we can in terms of future-proofing the communities that we create. And it is something that we are thinking about not only here in WA, but Lendlease as a business more broadly, not only in property, but, you know, across the different businesses and areas that we are operating in. But speaking about communities, there are obviously strategies in place that are specifically aimed at creating smart communities, and things like fibre to the home, etc., are already, you know, in place in most communities, including Alkimos Beach. So that's a project that I'm most intimately involved with. But I also manage the innovation framework for Lendlease property in WA, and as part of that global group of, you know, project leads and guides across the world, really, I get snippets of what Lendlease is working on through their innovation arm, and it's quite interesting. Well, sorry, I can't share too many details, but it's quite good to get that insight.
Yeah, definitely. I know you'll obviously be restricted, I totally understand, with the amount of details, but the project that you mentioned, is there some key kind of aspects you can tell us about that, you know, really set it apart from other projects to get that 6-star rating?
Well, there's many, many different aspects to it, and they range, obviously, it's an environmental rating.
Yeah.
You know, that's how many people understand it. However, it actually goes far beyond the environmental aspect of it. It goes goes on to the community aspect, to the economic aspect. So our commitments and therefore our initiatives on the ground, they range from, you know, something like a solar battery storage, which we have on site at the moment. It's a trial in Australia, which is unique. And we are conducting that in collaboration with various government agencies or service providers here in WA. That's one of the sort of, I guess, highlights of the project. So we mandate solar hot water systems and solar PV systems on every single home. That's one thing. The other one is, of course, you know, the use of recycled materials on site. We have a recycling program in place which the builders can utilize on site, so that diverts landfill, like up to 90% of construction waste is diverted from landfill.
Wow.
And it's, you know, the list goes on and on. I could talk for a very long time, but we have got a designated sustainability manager who manages our commitment that we have in terms of maintaining that credit, and she is sort of the interface between us and the GBCA. But it's very much something, as a project team, if you have a rating or a certification like a 6-star green star rating, it's not something that you can just achieve and then, you know, drop it. It's an ongoing commitment, and it requires buy-in from everybody at any point in time, because it is sometimes a bit restrictive in the decisions that you can make whilst you are developing a project, because you've made that commitment. So you obviously need to make sure that there's no breach of that. So as a result, you need people who are committed, who are driven and understand the importance of it, because what we've found is that often people don't necessarily understand what it actually means to try to develop a carbon neutral greenfield development. So there's a lot of education that still needs to take place as well. But getting back to smart component, the fact that we have got fiber to every single home here at Alkimos Beach and really good connectivity and Wi-Fi coverage then, of course, enables us to roll out technologies that we may be working on to make the city or the area more smart.
Yeah, cool. Can you give us an example of some of the smart tech you're thinking about implementing, or some of the smart tech, even if it's not in this project, some of the smart tech that you think is interesting that should be implemented?
Yeah, well, there's, and that, I guess, will very quickly go on to, for me to share a challenge, I guess, with you, is, you know, for example, smart bins is something that we see elsewhere in the world already implemented, and we sometimes run into problems with local government to actually see the value in smart bins in their parks, because every park that we develop in a project will then eventually be handed over to the respective council. Now, if they don't see value in those assets, they may not want those assets in their parks, basically. Mm-hmm. So whilst this is just to give you that example of smart bins, that's something that we'd really want to drive. And we know that in other areas in Australia, this is less of a problem. But certainly here in WA, we're still having to, with this particular council, there's still a bit of consultation that needs to occur. And then, of course, you talk about smart poles, so the ability to install light poles that not only are smart in their energy efficiency, like LEDs, but also record traffic data. They might record the wind direction, which is important to inform the sand drift management strategy, and things like that. So, yeah, there's quite a bit of technology already available, and we are certainly watching that space very closely to see what we can implement.
Yeah, definitely. Let's focus on Western Australia. Do you think that Western Australia ranks fairly high when it comes to smart cities or certain aspects of smart cities?
Well, certain aspects, yes. I mean, there are areas in WA that are extremely progressive, and I'm maybe biased because I happen to live in Fremantle, but the city of Fremantle is actually quite progressive. They also have a One Planet Living certification, and, of course, the the very famous Whitegum Valley project, which trials a whole range of different innovative things with the CRC for low carbon living. And those examples really provide a bit of hope, I guess, in that there is a recognition of the need for action among government. I would say, however, that in Australia generally, we're probably ranking maybe mid-level when it comes to our commitment to driving smart cities, certainly when you compare it to, say, Europe, where the EU as a body really drives it through initiatives like the Climate Kick, the Europe Innovation Partnership, I think it's called, EIP. And they have long accepted that climate change exists, and they have prioritised, I guess, actions to mitigate the risk of climate change. And that, I think, has yet to happen to that degree in Australia.
Yeah, definitely. So you see the smart city space is kind of an integration between, sustainability and innovation. Would that be about right?
Yeah, I think that's a really good point. And I think that, I mean, innovation and smart and sustainability, they've sort of all gone through the cycle of being buzzwords.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a lot of greenwash, and there'll be a lot of, I don't know what would be the equivalent term for, what the greenwash would be for smart, maybe smartwash, I don't know. But I think that, you've got to be really, really careful as well as to how to use those terms. But what I also think is, innovation in Australia, quite often we get really excited about things that we consider innovative. And yes, they're quite innovative for Australia. But if we apply a broader lens and look to other countries, then a lot of what we consider innovative is BAU in other countries,
mm-hmm.
where sustainability and innovation is already part of the culture. So we are such a smart country here in Australia, really, benefiting from so many different backgrounds culturally and a professional point of view. I really think that there's a potential for us to be a leader of smart cities once we have a shift of mindset and concentrate our efforts and decide where we want to go as a country.
Yeah, definitely. So do you think that Western Australia is a good place to pilot smart tech and smart concepts? Are they quite progressive in policy and regulation?
Well, I think that we do benefit from a number of young leaders or emerging leaders, I don't know what is the right term, in the government in Australia. So we have obviously had a change of government recently, although I can't vote, not being a citizen. But there is certainly a great opportunity for change, and we're already seeing that. So I think, to answer your question, yes, there is great opportunity here. I really think that Australia, WA in particular, those who haven't been here recently, has experienced a very significant growth in terms of its maturity. And certainly in the short time that I've been here, just over 10 years, the city has really changed very significantly, found its feet, embraced its identity, and from not only from an urban development point of view have great things happened, but there's been a bit of a shift of mindset, I feel, for people to actually embrace the fact that, yes, we're far away from everybody else, and yes, everyone thinks you've got to wait a while for things to happen in Australia, and sometimes they do, but there's quite a good energy here at this point in time. So, yeah, I'm quite confident that we'll make our mark.
Yeah, cool. So do you think that we can better integrate across the disciplines, as in government, universities, industries, or do you think they're doing it quite well in WA?
Well, there's possibly always room for improvement, I think. Just generally speaking, there's a few areas, I think, in the world who do get that 100% right. And the key is to keep an open dialogue. And I find that certainly industry organisations like the EDIA and the PCA, Institute of Architects, Planners, etc., don't know over East, but certainly in WA, are quite a strong voice. And it's a very closely well-connected community with quite a bit of overlap between the different industry organizations and their members. And I think the foundation is really very, very good in WA. What I do feel, and again, that's the opinion is informed by my German background, is that there's more opportunity for industry and academia to come together and then inform policies at a government level and really have the voice of the younger emerging generation heard, especially, you know, the students, and foster that sense of collaboration very early on, because you really need from day one, as you enter, and you know, academic institutions really need to foster that collaboration between the facilities that they embody. So, you know, have engineering talk to architecture faculty and to the, you know, the computer engineering, mechanical, etc., so that there's a holistic approach to the education, but then also make sure that students get exposure to industry from day one, so they don't leave as graduates who are a little bit perhaps surprised by the realities of smart cities or the development industry more broadly.
Yeah, so kind of giving them exposure to that early on, so then when they come out, they're, for want of a better term, more useful to an employer straight away, and have a grasp of reality rather than just a purely academic kind of approach to things.
That's right. And just to expand on that, it works the other way around as well. If industry was a bit less concerned about IP, and I know that this is perhaps a very naive comment on my behalf, but if we could actually engage with academic institutions through research, that would really be wonderful, I believe. You know, it would you get the student involved with your projects that you're working on, and you can share that widely, and it's great for the student, but it's also great for the for that industry organization or that company, because they get the, I guess, IP from the students, and they can work on problems that or challenges that they're facing in that moment. But it's just a resource that is not used very widely, if at all.
Yeah, no, I agree. I've seen a little bit of it emerging lately with this technology, particularly in, for example, self-driving cars or connected technology, connected vehicle technology, using PhD or even, you know, master students or whatever to kind of build projects that then industry can, you know, they get a very economical resource, for want of a better word, a free resource to kind of really dive deep into something that they're really interested in. And then at the end, and they come out with a product, which then they can sell to, you know, government or other industries. So, yeah, no, I definitely think we'll see more of that. And I think it's a really kind of good way of thinking about things, because it's kind of a win-win-win for industry, government and academia. So I think I would really like to see more of that. And I think through the smart city approach, we will see more of that.
Yeah, because ultimately the word smart implies that you are strategic in your approach, whatever it may relate to. So to not make use of that resource is, you know, not very smart. But yeah, I mean, I think there are certain government agencies that do it quite well. And one reason why I love the Waitakere Valley project so much is that it actually, you know, it's fairly small in scale but high in impact, because it involves so many different parties, including obviously Curtin University, who's made available and a number of really great researchers and a number of PhD students, and that information, like you say, will flow back to the government agency then who are developing the project.
Yeah. So I know you mentioned before about Australia or West Australia / Australia being leaders in some areas of smart city. Do you think that we can kind of, or we already are leaders in some areas, or there's areas, I mean, there's always areas of improvement, obviously, but can you kind of with your background from Europe, kind of see Australia where we're, you know, the peaks and troughs of smart city, and whether we can improve those areas or learn from others or teach others. What are your thoughts about that? I think I asked you four questions just in one just then.
Yeah, look, I think that Australia is really well placed for a number of different reasons. One being that we don't have the legacy of that is the urban fabric like Europe has. So, and by that I mean we're not constrained by too much heritage in terms of our buildings and the boundaries of our cities. So I think that whilst this can be, you know, a blessing and a curse in this context, perhaps it is a bit of a blessing in that we can find new ways and different ways that would not ever work in Europe. And one example is that the sheer scale of how we grow as a country, and development obviously follows that. And whilst I work in greenfield development, I would at any point promote infill development and urban regeneration over greenfield development. Mm-hmm. That's a more sustainable way of developing. But when we do develop at a large scale, you know, entire new communities for 15, 20, 30,000 people, that's, you know, that scale is just in my country, my native country, we wouldn't see that. So, you know, there's a really good opportunity to do things right, and you know, just work with the technologies as they are available. And Australians are so ready to embrace technology and gadgets. And I think that as a collective, we really once we acknowledge that we can be change makers through our engagement with technology, then once we have more people on board, I really think we're really, really well placed to lead in some aspects of the smart cities movement, whether it's energy or transport. But I really think that the fact that people so readily and happily use technology in this country is a real bonus for us in implementing strategies that rely on technology being used by the wider population.
Yeah, cool. No, that's a really good point. I suppose I think, yeah, in some aspects, you know, it may be that heritage. I mean, we have some heritage, but not to the scale of, you know, the buildings and the, you know, the boundaries of Europe. So it's a really interesting way to think about, I suppose, that's the architect in you, about how we can, what is it, reinvigorate urban areas as a more sustainable way of developing. It's really interesting.
Yeah, I agree.
Yeah, cool. So there's a lot of talk about emerging trends, you know, a lot of buzzwords around. What do you think the emerging trends are that people aren't talking about at the moment?
Well, I think one of the things that people talk too much about are electric vehicles,
yeah.
With all due respect to electric vehicles, but they won't solve the issues that we have relating to congestion and health and poor planning.
Mm-hmm.
So, I would like to see a much, much broader discussion about transport. And I know this is already happening, but I would like for that that conversation to really focus on a holistic approach as opposed to the one element, namely the electric vehicles as well. There's a lot of opportunity to reduce the extent of road infrastructure through integrated transit and gaining more green space and public open space for the benefit of the public. So I would like to really have that at the forefront of the conversation. After all, not about technology itself, but it's about making sure that the cities become more livable and that we can accelerate sustainability efforts. And we also need to ensure that whatever cities we plan, we do that in a way that is inclusive. And it's not only accessible to those who embrace technology. So by that I mean if we end up with cities that are great for the tech nerds who, you know, walk around with our iPhone all the time and are glued to the screen and have got 50 odd different apps on their phone, we run the risk of losing people who are not like that. So we've got to be very, very mindful and also disciplined to not exaggerate in how much technology we implement into our cities. What I would like to see is for the technology to be largely invisible, to just work sort of in the underground or somewhere where, you know, it's not as obvious. And I think if there's an opportunity to customize the experience that the person has with the environment, that would be really great. To give you an example, in Amsterdam, which is probably one of the most amazing places in terms of smart cities. So for those who may be listening, if you haven't heard of it, then look it up. They have a very, very good website. It's called Amsterdam Smart City. It's a great platform which is open to everybody, residents, industry, government. It's a public-private partnership to really drive smart initiatives. And it's a really good reminder of what you really want to get to. You know, that's cool. That to me, that is like the model. Like if we get that level of participation at all levels of society, that would be really wonderful. But one of the things that they've developed is an app that lets cyclists, and you know there are very, very many cyclists in the Netherlands in general, but also in Amsterdam, and it lets cyclists switch on street lights along their bike path as they're driving or as they're cycling past. Through their phone. So, you know, something like that is pretty cool. And obviously it has the benefit of not wasting more energy than is needed for the city who runs the asset that is a streetlight. But for the user, it also, you know, gives a really great experience. You know, I'm a cyclist myself, and if I could do that, and, you know, when I'm riding along after dark, it'd be great.
Yeah, definitely. So,
yeah, that sort of thing, if we could have a bit more of that, be awesome.
Yeah, no, definitely. No, it's really cool. Oh, well, it's been great to talk to you this afternoon. Definitely lots of things going through my mind now, thinking about, merging architecture and engineering and the centre of it all being people. So, yeah, my last question is, how can people connect with you?
LinkedIn's probably the best way. Just to find me, my name is Janine Betts, B-E-T-Z. I think there's only one. And just send me a message, and hopefully you hear this podcast and maybe you want to comment on it, and then hopefully, Zoe, you will share those comments with me and I have to get back
definitely
to anyone who reaches out.
Yeah, sure, will. I'll put all those links in the show notes anyway, and people should be able to connect with you that way.
Oh,
cool. Well, yeah, it was so great to talk to you this afternoon, and we'll definitely talk again soon.
Thanks very much for having me, Zoe.
No worries.
Have a great day.
You too.
Bye.
Bye. It's the Smart City Podcast. Whoa. Thanks so much for listening to the Smart City Podcast. Show notes for this episode and all other episodes can be found at thesmartcitypodcast.com. If you have any questions or comments for me or any of my guests, connect with me via email, zoe@thesmartcitypodcast.com, or via the socials. I'm on Twitter and Facebook @smartcitypod. As always, I hope you enjoyed listening to this episode as much as I enjoyed making it. Smart City Podcast is what you're looking for.